It's the California Wine Country Podcast with Steve Jackson and Dan Berger, brought to you by Bottle Barn. We taste, we laugh, we learn.
It's time for California Wine Country, brought to you by Bottle Barn. Our good friend, the wine buyer from Bottle Barn, Barry Herbst, is back with us. Good to see you as always, my friend.
Good to see you, Steve. Thanks.
And, of course, my co-host every week, Dan Berger.
It's great to be here.
And you can read Dan's wine column in the Press Democrat every Tuesday.
Wednesday.
Every
Wednesday.
Today.
Today.
Works out
today.
Perfect. Oh, see, you know, because I look at it.
You get it online on Wednesday, right?
Yes.
On Tuesday.
Tuesday, yeah. So I read it Tuesday, but it is today's paper. You can read it or read it online on Tuesday. And we're going to talk about the Best of the North Coast Wine Challenge.
Among other things. We've got a lot of topics today. We've got a Corvin tasting. We've got Alchemista with us. We've got Greg LaFollette. We've got Barry Herbst with some of the wines from the North Coast Wine Challenge. This is a packed show.
All right, beautiful. Greg LaFollette has been with us before. He's wearing his overalls, which he gave me a pair. a couple of years ago, which I still enjoy as hell. I love the overalls. I don't wear them all that often, but I do enjoy them. Greg, good to see you, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me here.
All right. Now, LaFollette Wines, you are not part of that anymore, even though your name is.
That's correct, yeah.
You may not want to talk about the entire situation on what happened, but what can you tell us?
It's owned by Pete and Terry Kite, and I'm no longer a part of the program.
So you've got a new winery now.
That's right, Alchemista.
Alchemista.
Alchemista Cellars, and it's all direct-to-consumer and mostly sold as futures.
Wow.
And Greg is not going to say this. I will. He is one of the great winemakers in America.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I think Ben Pearson said that the last time Greg was on. Where does the name come from?
LaFollette or Alchemista?
Alchemista.
Alchemista, because LaFollette means the little fool in French. But Alchemista is the Spanish word for the alchemist. And, of course, I have degrees in plant biology and chemistry. And having worked with Andre Chelischef, who was really America's great wine alchemist, it's kind of a pay on to him from myself and my business partner, Patrick Dillon.
Nice. And Dan, Andre, his name has been brought up for 9 years on this show.
Story after story after story.
Give us a reset for people who are just...
Well, he was a white Russian who was living actually in France, got his degree at the Institute in Paris, became a winemaker. But he was originally Russian and had a very short man. He was about 5'2", with a very, very thick Russian accent and a great sense of humor and never-ending speaker, always talking.
How did he wind up here?
He was hired in 1936 by George de la Tour, who owned BV Vineyards, Beaulieu Vineyard in Napa Valley, brought him over to be the winemaker. Andre nearly left after a year because the place was such a filthy mess, but he got it cleaned up and he stayed around. He was convinced to stay here by Dr. Maynard Amarin at UC Davis, and Amarin said, "We're just getting started. Give us a chance." And Andre stayed and was here until he died in 94. He was 92 years old.
And what was his, because he is legendary and his name comes up all the time. Over all these years, why was he legendary? What did he do?
Well, number one was the fact that he was more insightful than just about any other winemaker at the time in the United States. But secondarily, his background, his training was such that he could see visionarily a way to get around certain of the problems that we were having here. So he imposed certain regimes that to this day are still legendary. And he did more research in areas of the wine business that needed research done on his own. He didn't allow anybody else to do the research. He did it himself.
And he advised a lot of people on what to plant in certain areas that turned out to be brilliant, you know. Try Pinot Noir here where it had never been planted before.
Right. In 1946, he planted Pinot Noir in the Carneros, the first person to plant Pinot Noir in the Carneros.
46.
Yeah.
Some legendary wines out of there in the 70s.
And so, who else did he work with? I mean,
well, his research partner, his student research partner was Joe Heitz, who ended up founding Heitz Cellar. But he also consulted for about 75 wineries throughout the United States, including his own nephew's winery in Washington State. There are legendary stories about him. I can tell you 10 or 12 of them, but we don't have time for that. But he was really an amazing guy. And the fact that Greg has such a connection to Andre is really most important, because it was Andre's view that we could do things with wine that simply had never been done in this country before.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and like I said, for 8-9 years on this segment on Wednesdays, his name comes up all the time.
Well, just about everything he made was incredible. One day I asked him why he never made Zinfandel, and he said, "I have no knowledge of Zinfandel." So he never made one.
Didn't bother.
Just didn't bother with it.
And some of the 1960s BV Cabernets are still some of the greatest I've ever had in my career. So, you know, 68, 70.
Right.
Wines that live 40, 50 years flawlessly. They were great.
Wow.
So we have a test in front of you, Steve. The black glass. What's in the black glass? Is it white or red?
Now, these black wine glasses, we did this. Who was it? Justin Wangler from KJ came in a few years ago with these. And you cannot, they're beautiful black wine glasses, but even if you look into the wine that's poured in there, you can't tell whether it's red or white.
Right.
What's the deal with this? And why did I do that?
Because I had a wine that I thought would be best tasted when you didn't see the color. And I'll show it to you in a moment. But what do you think? Is the wine any good? Does it taste good?
It tastes like a white to me.
Okay.
Maybe a Sauv Blanc or a Chard. I can't see. You look into the damn thing, and you really can't tell. I love these wine glasses.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, these are great. It took me a number of months.
Do I get to take one home?
No, they're too expensive. All right, so here you go. Here's the wine. You ready?
Yeah.
It's an old, tired German rosé.
Okay. Oh, no. Well, I was right, at least.
You were right.
It was white.
Essentially white wine.
Essentially,
really aromatic
still.
Yeah, and very aromatic. Now, the thing about this is if I poured this into a white glass, a clear glass, the color would put you off. Because once you see it in the glass, you'll say, oh, my gosh, that's tired. That's already oxidized.
Yeah, that does not look like a current really good rosé.
No, it looks. Now, this is 2000, what did I say on this? This is 2010 rosé, so it's already 7 years old.
From where?
From Germany.
Germany.
So this wine is made from a grape variety that very few people even know. It's made from, I forget the name of the grape even. Anyway,
I like it.
It's a gorgeous wine, but if you had seen the color before you tasted it, it would have opinionated your... You would have thought that the wine was tired.
Yeah, interesting.
Here it is.
20% Trollinger.
Trollinger, that's the grape.
Trollinger. Well, it's dry. I like it.
It's good.
Nice wine.
Oh, you're coming around. You're getting off the buttery Chardonnay thing.
That happened years ago.
I thought we were having to wean you off of that.
No. Right. I'm done with that.
Good.
That's really good.
Stuff, isn't
yeah.
it? And I think the black glass helps to mask the strange color. It was a beautiful color when it was younger.
I'm sure. But you're right. You poured it into a clear wine glass, and it looked like...
It looks tired.
Yeah, tired. I love that word, tired, because I'm always tired.
You should get
What's the deal with the black wine glasses? I mean, this is cool.
Well, they're used widely at UC Davis and at Fresno State.
For tasting?
Because they don't want people's opinions to be colored by what the wine looks like.
Right.
And sometimes you have a... I did a test some years ago. A UC Davis grad student was doing a research project, and she put all the wine into black glasses, and it was scarier than hell. You couldn't tell what you were doing.
It's funny.
Well, you know, what blows me away, and when Justin Wangler from KJ brought these in, you know, it's okay. So they're black glasses and you can't see, but then you look in to the glass
and you still can't see.
No, you have no idea. It could be red, it could be white, it could be rosé. And
the real reason for doing this is to free your mind up so that you have no preconceived notion about what the wine is going to be by its color.
Looking at it, yeah. No, that makes sense. Craig.
Yes, sir.
Welcome back, dude.
Well, thanks for having
still
me.
Still wearing the overalls. I love that.
Yeah, you know, the first time I sat down with everyone, you guys were at the old place, and I brought all my kids because they were all helping to make the wines. That was many, many years ago. And then the last time was with Bob Levine, I think.
Well, that's going way back.
And yeah.
We've been doing the drive for 9 years, so I...
Oh, boy.
But you were in on the drive.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to try and pronounce this again. Alquimista.
Alquimista.
Alquimista Cellars.
Yeah, the alchemist in Spanish.
Right, okay. Yeah. Alquimista. And give us, you mentioned some of the history. When was your first vintage here?
Well, we've only been incorporated for a couple of years now, so we're pretty new. But I'm what you call a consulting winemaker. And, yeah, you know, I hire out my sensory organs to the highest bidder. And,
don't we all?
Yeah. And, right. And so I had a couple of clients that actually paid me with some wine that I made for them. And so I made a couple of wines in 2013. And 2014, we actually got our real start and then incorporated in 2015 in time to sell the wines. And they're pretty much all direct to consumer and mostly sold as futures. So people...
Now explain that, sold as futures. I mean...
Well, people come into the winery and they barrel taste with us. And then they say, well, this tastes really good. I want a case of this or some of that. And...
Or a barrel?
Well, we actually, this last Sunday, we just held a barrel auction at the Laguna de Santa Rosa Foundation. Cool. And sold off a half barrel for several thousand dollars to benefit Laguna de Santa Rosa. I did a talk on biodiversity in the vineyard and biodynamic farming, which we do a lot of. And Alquimista is all about giving back to the community. Our labels that are in front of us here. Every single one of my separate wines has a different, unique piece of artwork from local artists. There was Carol Watanabe started a 9/11 women's art group. And so each one of them has done a different piece of art, and we support our local artists in this way.
That's beautiful, man.
We support the Laguna de Santa Rosa, Annalee High School. We're very... philanthropic, and I'm at the point in my life now where I just don't want to work with people that are, that are kind of like a-holes. So I
that right too.
Yeah.
Right.
I really want to be a part of the community and work with
right
people
on.
That I really love and appreciate. And
that's beautiful, dude.
That's what Alquimista is all about. It's very small. It's about 1,000 cases.
All right. So you can't get this, Barry, at Bottle Barn.
Sorry, Barry, you can't get it at Bottle Barn.
I'm not going to be able to do my usual break time business negotiation.
Yeah, exactly. Not on this one in particular.
All right. Is the Chardonnay ready to go? Can we
yep,
try that?
Chardonnay's ready, yeah. So this is from the Lorenzo vineyard.
Are we switching from the black glasses?
Yes.
Yeah, we're going to move to good stuff. This is mine.
So the Lorenzo vineyard is one of the oldest Chardonnay vineyards in the Russian River Valley. And
grazie.
Prego.
I'll get mine. For you,
okay. And this is a wine that's made basically with nothing but a little SO2 added. It's wild yeast, no additions of any kind.
Ooh.
And this is a vineyard. I started working with these grapes in 1993 when Jess Jackson hired me away from Andre Celis-Jeff to help start up Hartford Court and La Crema, which he was resuscitating out of bankruptcy at the
right.
time.
Right, mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
This was on a Marcuson single vineyard at one point.
Right? Yes, that's right. Yeah, Marcuson really made this famous, the Lorenzo vineyard, Helen Turley. And I'm still there, and she's not. And so we love the Bizzanos. They were there on Sunday helping to support the Laguna de Santa Rosa Foundation. They only live just basically a few blocks away. But this is an example. All of the vineyards that I brought, I've been with these, some of them, for 25 or 30 years. And
wow.
What I'm more proud of than any score or anything like that is the fact that I've kept together the same group of growers over many years and many different projects. And the same crew that helped me to start Flowers and helped to start Hartford Court and La Crema also helped me to start Tandem, and I sent them all over the world to help me to start wineries in South America, Australia, South Africa. And that's what I really like better than anything else, that I've had the same community of growers and
for so long,
folks over many years.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Now, this wine is made in the old Burgundian style.
No, Dan, again, Mr. Chardonnay, that's my name.
Yes, sir.
Tell me why I like this so much.
Well, first of all, its purest form of Chardonnay. It's Burgundian style. It's got real, honest-to-goodness Burgundian flavors. It's a little bit, I would call it,
and aromatics, too.
And aromatics. That slight, very slight funky component, which is really an essential component of white Burgundy.
Which
and
I love.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's hard to capture because you're on the edge of disaster. If you got too much of that, then the wine is gone. It's already spoiled. Here, the wine is perfectly in structure because the acidity is so good here.
Yeah,
the finish is outstanding. Standing.
Fantastic.
Yeah. This will be with me all night.
Oh, yeah. We'll have to leave the bottle here with you.
Yes, you will.
And it'll literally be with you.
Yes, you will. I'm making chicken tonight.
Now, you made this to go the long distance.
Oh, absolutely. We use a technique that has been called managed sulfides, and you're absolutely right. You're on the very edge of disaster. You kind of push this thing as far as it can go. It goes right to the very edge of the precipice, you let it look over, and then you pull it back.
Yeah. He's absolutely correct in terms of where he's at.
So if you screw up one little bit.
1 or 2 hours later, this wine is dead.
Wow.
And you can't bring it back at that point.
Well, it's...
What's the year on this?
This is a 2015.
Oh, God, this is wonderful.
And that slightly funky thing my wife also calls sex in a bottle.
There you go.
That's probably the best score I ever got.
That's the only sex I get anymore is sex in a bottle. Well, that's a whole nother show.
Okay.
It's the... twice awarded California Wine Country with the Taste Awards in Los Angeles, the International Taste Awards. Dan Berger, my co-host, is, of course, with us. And Greg La Follette, formerly of La Follette Winery, now with Alchemista. Thank you.
You saved him just in time.
Yeah. And, of course, our good friend Barry Herbst, the wine buyer at Bottle Barn. This segment is brought to you each week by Bottle Barn. Okay, we're moving from this amazing Chardonnay. Oh, and, I mean, and Dan, sum it up.
Killer wine. Well, if you're a Burgundy lover, this is the wine you have to try.
And no, I'm talking about the Chard.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. White Burgundy.
Burgundian,
Burgundian style.
Yes.
This is... Now, you don't have any of this left, do you?
We've got a few cases left, yeah.
Yeah, it's just outrageous.
Did you bring any cases with you?
Yeah. I didn't. I'm sorry. And that's the lack of planning.
That terminology, Burgundian, gets kicked around a lot.
Yeah, I know.
Needlessly. But this is, for me,
this is
one of the few Chardonnays, California, that really approaches the funk, the earth.
It's unbelievable.
But the
purity of the fruit is the most amazing thing, because as you smell it, you say to yourself, this can't have all that minerality in the mid-palate like Burgundy does. It does. It has it all. It's the old. It's like you were talking about Batard Montrachet. This is old style Batard Montrachet. Yeah. This is the way it works. And you buy those wines, and whether you drink them now or you hold them for 10 more years, it doesn't make any difference. They just become exactly what they're supposed to be.
Yeah, it's even better to hold them for a while. I make my wines to last.
Yeah, well, and the secret is that acidity. Great acidity in the wine.
Yep.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
All right, and now there's a Pinot that you've brought in. What year is this?
This is also a 2015. It's Pinot Noir from the Vanderkamp Vineyard high up on Sonoma Mountain. It's one of the highest vineyards on Sonoma Mountain, right across from the Zen Buddhist Center, north-facing slope, so it's quite cool climate, a number of different clones, and it's one of the oldest Pinot Noir vineyards in Sonoma County.
And that's the secret. old Pinot Noir clones and old vines. If you put them all together and then you put in the hands of a master like this, so now the wine has all this wonderful acidity, but it's not tart as much as it is complete. It has this completeness. It's not sweet in the entry. It's not sweet in the finish. It's basically, again, it's back to Burgundy.
Mm-hmm. Well, we did 25% of this was done completely separately, 100% whole cluster, a technique called carbonic maceration.
Whoa!
The Beaujolais style.
Geek alert! Geek alert!
So it's basically Beaujolais in a bottle.
Well, not to be confused with new
Beaujolais. Yeah, I go to Kaiser for that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
Well, I think I got that, what is that?
Well, that's where instead of in one vat, we use dairy tanks. For our fermentations because they're shallow and broad and they have good surface-to-volume ratio. But instead of one fermentation where one yeast is conducting the fermentation across all these berries, instead you very gently place every single cluster completely whole inside of the dairy tank. You evacuate all the oxygen, and then instead of one fermentation, you have tens of thousands of fermentations.
Every single berry is fermenting separately.
Yes, and it's an internal.
Holy crap.
It's an enzymatic fermentation from within.
How is that possible?
It just happens anaerobically. No air is involved.
And you can't pop the berry off of the stem, otherwise it's no longer a completely sealed vessel. So you have to have
the end result is that the aromatics you're capturing are aromatics you'd never see from a traditional fermentation.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
And so that's part of where the playfulness comes from. But the reason we're able to do this is because the very last clone that we pick, which is a clone called Dijon 828, which is the only double A-rated clone from Burgundy here in the United States, is a very late ripener, and we get nice brown, ripe stems. So we're able to actually use the stems in the fermenter.
The trick is to avoid green stems, because if you have green stems, you're going to have green flavor in the wine.
Exactly. Yeah.
Pickly. Yeah.
Yep. So, okay, so to avoid the green stems,
he just waits and waits until the stems have turned brown and they've sort of dried out.
And then you pull them?
No, you put them in the tank.
The
whole thing. Okay.
What we actually do is I actually load the tank up in my truck. And then I drive it up to the winery, and we put the clusters directly into the fermentation tank, which is evacuated from oxygen with CO2.
So it's vineyard fermented.
Well, we put them in the vineyard, and then we drive it back down all sealed up, and we tread it once or twice a day, kind of like I Love Lucy. So that's the only – when my kids were growing
up – Portuguese are still shredding
fruit. This was the only job that my kids fought to do. Everything else, like scrubbing barrels and cleaning out tanks, they didn't want to do. But stomping
on
the grapes.
The fun is that the fermentation starts under your feet. And it starts to get warm, and your feet start to get warm as you're stomping the fruit. It's fascinating.
Yep.
No, it is. You know, the Harvest Fair all these years, and I've been doing radio in this area for 30-some years, some of my morning show partners and I, they say, come over and at the Harvest Fair, stomp the grapes, you know, and we're going, oh, jeez. But you're right. It does. It gets crazy. Warmer as you're stomping.
That's right. The fermentation warms up.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, I don't want to do this. But anyway.
And for those of you ladies out there who like exfoliation, it's kind of like that for your feet. You know, it's a really
it's
nice little massage.
It's a certain terroir to the flavor of the wine, too.
Yeah, that too. We wash our feet before we stomp those. So, yeah.
Yeah, see, my problem was I didn't. Okay. All right, this Pinot.
Oh, this Pinot is
Dan,
fabulous.
Talk about this Pinot.
Well, again, it's red Burgundy, but it has a certain purity of fruit. The interesting thing here is that where the white wine is really European-style Burgundy, this is California-style Pinot Noir. Mm-hmm. I mean, it does have a lot of exuberant fruit up front. It needs about 6 to 9 more years.
It's really?
Old school.
Yeah. A lot
of structure.
Yeah. It's killing me right now.
Oh, it's fabulous to drink. If you had a bottle of it, it would be hard not to drink it. But if you had the patience, this is going to be rewarded. This just needs time in the bottle.
Yeah, at home right now, we're really digging on our 2006 to 2008 Vanderkamp Pinots. So like you say, 10 years?
Yeah, 10 years is just about right for this stuff. And that, in fact, I wrote an article last week for our newsletter. And our thing is aging wine, if it's a good wine, aging wine is a no-brainer. You cannot miss if it's good wine. If it's a bad wine, aging wine is a terrible idea.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Well, again, as I always say, and Dan, you know this, my wine cellar, unlike yours, is in the trunk of my car.
There we go.
You know, I make it from here to home, and then, you know.
So we'll have you that cellar that for at least another hour or so.
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah. And we have one wine that Barry brought, which I am overjoyed by. It's we're talking about Grenache, and we're going to do a Grenache tasting at the store at Bottle Barn shortly. And you brought a Mendocino County Grenache from this incredible vineyard called Eagle Point, which is used to be called Scharfenberger. And this is a wonderful, wonderful area. The wine typically doesn't have any deep color because Grenache is a somewhat lighter grape variety. If you ever see a pitch black Grenache, you have to question the winemaker about what he added.
So stay away from a dark.
Well, no, they can be good. They can be very good, but they're not typical. A good example.
Should we do his last one?
Why don't
first?
We do this in next, and then we'll do the.
Okay.
We'll do Greg's last, and then
Zin.
Barry, you'll tell us all about what you brought. But yeah, let's do that.
Oh, this is fabulous. This is a Lodi Zinfandel.
Yeah, this is one of the oldest Zinfandel vineyards in America.
Really?
This is 129 years old.
Jeez.
And not only does it have Zin, it has these varietals, some of which I'd never heard of before. Black Prince, which is a heritage, table grape varietal. Mm-hmm. Flame Tokay, which is also a heritage table grape varietal. It has Carignan in it. And it also has Mission Grapes, which was the first Vitis vinifera vine brought to the New World by the Franciscans and made its way up the Camino de Real.
It was planted in 1769 at Mission San Diego.
Wow.
Yeah. Well,
Dan, the man.
This is that.
I wrote
grape.
The book on San Diego history.
So. Okay. And those varietals were done again with carbonic maceration. So this is not your typical Zinfandel. I also picked this about 2 weeks earlier than most of the other folks in the Lodi area do.
This is atypical of a Lodi red wine.
Yes.
Very silky. Very
yeah.
Yeah, we really focused on the tannins, and the carbonic maceration also makes it more playful and more approachable.
Again, a geek alert.
The whole cluster, 100%, tens of thousands of individual berries, each one doing their own
So basically Beaujolais-style fruit, but with Zinfandel as the flavor.
And then and then Zinfandel crushed on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
So the secondary or the enzymatic fermentation called carbonic is at the bottom of the fermenter, and then the Zin was destemmed normally and worked
on top of it.
Right, but these are all wild primary and secondary fermentation. So this wine took about 2 weeks before the fermentation actually took off, which gave time for those whole clusters to do their little enzymatic thing.
Steve, if you ever have an opportunity to try a carbonic grape berry that has gone through the fermentation, they give you a berry. Basically, it's just a grape. And you pop it in your mouth, and you can taste about 2% alcohol inside the grape.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's like prior to the wine being made.
It's not even wine yet. It's still a grape.
Right.
But you taste it, and you actually can taste the 2% alcohol.
Wow. That's amazing. We should you should make that happen this year, and
we'll bring sometime in September. In September, I'll bring in a handful of them, and you'll get drunk on the air with grapes.
You can get them from me. I'll provide those carbonic grapes.
Carbonic. Yeah. What a great name.
Yeah.
This is delicious wine. Yeah.
Thank you.
You have any more of this?
We have a few cases of this still left as well.
It's not cheap.
No, this is expensive for a Zinfandel. It's in the 50-something dollar a bottle range.
Fabulous wine.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Really fabulous.
We have a lot of fun making it.
Since, unfortunately, you can't get this stuff at Bottle Barn with Barry Herbst. Greg, again, tell us how folks can get this wine.
Well, you can visit us at www.alchemistacellars.com.
That's spell that.
A-L-Q-U-I-M-I-S-T-A, Cellars, C-E-L-L-E-R-S, .com. Or you can email me at the same, or you can call me on my cell phone, which is 707-953-WINE, or 9463. Very cute, I know.
Well, that is cute, but yeah. We don't generally give out phone numbers because nobody can. But no, but that's not bad. Yeah. It's what's the prefix before
253?
What's that?
953.
953.
Okay.
953-WINE. But if you go to the website, that's the best way.
Yeah.
And again, you're not going to, unfortunately, be able to get this stuff with Barry Herbst at Bottle Barn.
We have no shortage of wine, though. We're okay.
yeah, apparently you don't.
I'd love to have this wine, but it's that small a quantity, I understand. It's a smart business.
Tell us a little bit about Wild Hog Grenache.
So this is Dan Schoenfeld, who you know
my neighbor.
Yeah, they were neighbors. He's way out west near Fort Ross, not far from Flowers, where Greg was. And bless his soul, he drives an hour and a half every time we place an order with him to bring the wine in himself. So we try and give him a decent order each time.
I think he's been on this segment
possibly
years
ago.
No,
he's a longtime favorite at the store. The wines all sell like crazy. He makes all kinds of interesting things, Grenache, Sangiovese, a couple beautiful Pinots, a couple beautiful Zins. One from right on the property there in Fort Ross, you'd never guess Zinfandel out there, and it's beautiful.
Yeah.
And he must have a spot that gets warm enough. And just for the money, really remarkable wines. And this Grenache is a good kickoff point for our tasting next week.
Yeah, this is really fabulous stuff. This has got some really nice wild strawberry, sort of a cranberry almost, great acidity in the wine. It's a whole different game from Zinfandel because it has this sort of a... Well, now, Greg, you made Grenache a number of times.
Oh, yeah.
How do you compare that to the ones you've made?
Well, this one has a lot of depth and intensity to it. Coming from Eagle Point Ranch, which is really high up. It's about 2,000 feet in elevation.
Wow.
I think off of the north side of Pine Mountain, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
Casey Hartlip.
That's right.
A fabulous grower, a fabulous site. And this really speaks to the site. The Grenaches that I've made, you know, are very different because they weren't planted at this elevation or done by Casey. The project that you and I were kind of associated with a few years ago.
Indirectly.
Really a lot of raspberry. That was done with a lot of partial carbonic maceration to really build the playfulness. And this one is just pretty much straight-ahead serious Grenache.
That's very serious Grenache.
No tricks,
what's the retail price on this?
I think it is $17.99.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. It's a $40 wine based on what I'm tasting here.
Yeah. No, a really high-toned, crisp. This would be very interesting to see what it does with age.
That's ridiculous. You know, giving it away.
And the guy, Dan, is great. He's really a wonderful guy. He was my neighbor for several years out at Flowers, and I really have a lot of respect for him, not just as a winemaker, but as a human being.
Yeah.
He's a really good man.
Yeah. So that is 2014. Mm-hmm. Boy, that's a good vintage, too. Whoa, a wonderful vintage for red wine in particular, and especially on the North Coast. Eagle Point Vineyard Grenache 2014 from Wild Hog Vineyards. Really wonderful.
All those wines are great.
We're really blessed to have so much access to so many different wines in this area, and in particular because some of them are available and some of them are just a little hard to get, but you can get them. It's not like there's a wine writer from the East Coast, I won't name names, who writes about these things and gives 100-point scores and then says, unavailable.
Right.
And we don't need that.
I think we know what you're talking about, but
that makes it more exciting. You always want what you can't have. Right?
Alchemista Cellars, alchemista.com. Greg La Follette, formerly of La Follette Wines, and now doing this. The stuff is amazing, man.
Truly great.
Yeah, there's not a thing we tasted today from you, Greg, that wasn't just blowing us away.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Steve. I think the amazing thing is that here in the wine country, we've got a program like this that you've been hosting for a number of years, and we've got
right on.
Dan here, who's just been, even while we've been off the air, he's been regaling us with these stories of things back from the, you know, well, from long ago.
And way too old.
Yeah, and so this is what's really amazing is we're here in the wine country of the vibrant
right on.
Community that supports us.
And, you know, even in Los Angeles, we win twice. We've won an international award for radio food and beverage, you know, with this show, this segment, which, you know, says that it's not just Sonoma County in the North Bay or, you know, the Bay Area, you know. Internationally, yeah. They're going,
hey,
this show's great.
The show started with a German rosé. Come on.
Yeah, that's right. The outreach is pretty far.
All right. Barry Herbst, wine buyer at Bottle Barn, my co-host Dan Berger, and Greg La Follette. Thank you so much.